Option B, an audio summary. Sheryl Sandberg was the chief operating officer of Facebook and the founder of LeanIn.org. In 2015, her husband Dave Goldberg died suddenly from cardiac arrhythmia while they were vacationing in Mexico. He was 47 years old. They had been married for 11 years and had two young children. Sheryl felt like she would never feel pure joy again. That was when her close friend, Wharton psychologist Adam Grant, told her something that changed everything. Resilience is not a fixed trait that you either have or do not have. It is something you can build. That conversation became the foundation of this book, which combines Sheryl's personal experience of devastating loss with Adam's research in organizational psychology and behavioral science. The central question of this book is simple but profound. When life delivers a crushing blow, how do you put the pieces back together without being completely destroyed? The answer is not a quick fix or a set of empty platitudes. It is a rigorous, research-backed exploration of how human beings can endure the unendurable and sometimes even grow stronger on the other side. The first key argument is about the 3 P's that trap people in suffering. This framework comes from the work of psychologist Martin Seligman. Personalization is the belief that everything bad that happens is your fault. After Dave died, Sheryl kept thinking, if only I had insisted we go on a different trip, or if only I had woken up earlier that morning. The truth is that most tragedies are not caused by us, and even when our actions contributed, beating ourselves up only prolongs the pain. Pervasiveness is the belief that a single tragedy destroys every aspect of your life. After a divorce, you might feel like your career is also ruined, your children hate you, and even your favorite sports team is cursed. This is not how reality works. One pillar falling does not mean the entire structure collapses. Permanence is the belief that you will never feel better, that the pain will last forever. But the research is clear, the intensity of even the most searing negative emotions fades over time. The wound does heal, even if the scar remains. Recognizing these three cognitive traps is the first step toward reclaiming your life. The second key argument is the power of perceived control. Adam Grant and his research team conducted a study in which participants faced a stressful task while a button labeled "Stop Pressure" sat on their desk. The button was not even connected to anything. But simply knowing they could exert control if they needed to dramatically lowered participants' anxiety levels and improved their performance. This finding has enormous implications for anyone going through trauma. You need to build your own support button in advance. Know what mental health resources are available to you. Identify the friends and family members you can call at 3 in the morning. Understand that when you cannot hold yourself up, there are places and people to catch you. The mere knowledge that you have some degree of control can carry you through the darkest moments. The third key argument is post-traumatic growth. This is one of the most important and most misunderstood concepts in psychology. Adam's research has identified 5 distinct dimensions along which people commonly grow after trauma. First, discovering inner strength that you never knew you possessed. Second, developing a new appreciation for ordinary life. The day that felt boring and uneventful before suddenly feels like a gift. Third, forging deeper and more authentic relationships, because you now truly understand what matters. Fourth, recognizing new possibilities and new paths that were invisible to you before. Fifth, finding a greater sense of meaning and purpose. Sheryl was initially skeptical of this idea. It sounded too neat, too idealized. But she came to realize something crucial: if you do not believe growth is possible, you will never find it. Post-traumatic growth is not something you can force or manufacture. It emerges when you do the hard work of engaging with your reality as it is, not as you wish it were, and gradually, often imperceptibly, reclaim the life that was stolen from you. The fourth key argument is about how to support other people who are suffering. Most of us have no idea what to say when someone we care about experiences a devastating loss. We tend to avoid the topic, pretend nothing happened, or offer empty phrases like "everything happens for a reason" or "let me know if there is anything I can do." The research in this book shows that avoiding the person's pain does not protect them. It isolates them. What helps is acknowledging the reality of what happened. Mirror the person's emotions. Say, "This is terrible, I cannot imagine what you are going through, but I am here." One especially practical piece of advice from the book If you lose your temper with someone because you are overwhelmed with grief, offer a double apology. Apologize for your behavior, and then explain that you are in a very dark place right now. This simple act of accountability can repair relationships that might otherwise be permanently damaged by uncontrolled grief. The fifth key argument is how to help children build resilience. After Dave died, one of Cheryl's most urgent concerns was how to help her two children survive this loss and emerge intact. The book outlines four core beliefs that resilient children tend to hold. First, they believe they have some degree of agency and control over their own lives. Second, they believe that failure is not catastrophic but is something you can learn from. Third, they believe that they have intrinsic worth as human beings, independent of their achievements or failures. Fourth, they believe they have strengths they can rely on and also share with others. Cheryl and her children developed a family mantra, "We take it back." They do not avoid everything that reminds them of Dave. They bring those memories into their daily lives. They allow themselves to feel sadness, anger, and loss, and they also allow themselves to feel joy. The two are not mutually exclusive. This is perhaps the hardest and most important lesson in the entire book. You do not have to wait until you are over it to be happy again. In terms of practical implications, for the general reader, the value of this book lies in its concreteness. It does not tell you to stay positive or look on the bright side. It gives you specific, research-backed practices. The nighttime journaling routine is one example. Spend 10 minutes each evening writing down three small accomplishments, doing a free writing emotional dump, noting one small thing and one big thing you are grateful for, and recording three moments of joy from the day. These small habits, sustained over time, can gradually rebuild your sense of agency. For parents, the chapters on raising resilient children are an invaluable guide to navigating loss, failure, and setback as a family. For managers and co-workers, the book offers a masterclass in how to support grieving colleagues without awkwardness or harm. Ultimately, Option B is not a book that makes everything better in five easy steps. It is more like a map. It shows you what the terrain looks like after a catastrophe. It points out which paths are worth taking and which dead ends to avoid. Cheryl closes the book with a line that captures its entire spirit: "I am more vulnerable than I thought, but also more resilient than I ever imagined." That is the real message here. Admit your vulnerability. And do not underestimate your capacity to endure, to adapt, and to build something meaningful even on the far side of devastation. Option A may be gone forever. But Option B can still be good. Not the same kind of good, but a different kind of good. And sometimes, that is more than enough.